We're going to continue with Miket, and I've given it another title as well, A Resurrection and a Reckoning. And so Miket means at the conclusion and covers Genesis 41 through 44, 17. So now Joseph has been in prison on a bogus rape charge, and poor Joseph, betrayed by his brothers, enslaved in Egypt, imprisoned on false charges, and yet everywhere Joseph went, he conducted himself with integrity, and God gave him favor. Eventually, Joseph became custodian to Pharaoh's chief cupbearer and chief baker who had been jailed, and one night they each had a perplexing dream. Joseph interpreted them, foretelling their future, and sure enough, exactly as Joseph interpreted the dreams, the chief cupbearer was restored to office 3 days later. The chief baker was hanged. Dave took us through this. And Joseph had asked the chief cupbearer to put in a good word for him with Pharaoh. And, of course, the cupbearer forgot all about Joseph for 2 full years. Still, Joseph continued to do his work diligently. But he couldn't possibly have known how dramatically things were about to change. Parashah Miket opens with another strange series of dreams, this time interrupting the sleep of Pharaoh. He summoned his wise men, but they were at a loss to declare the meaning. And the cupbearer suddenly thinks, oh boy. And has to fess up embarrassingly that he had forgotten Joseph. He described to Pharaoh this impressive young Hebrew in the prison who interprets dreams. Joseph was immediately summoned to the palace and was able to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. There would be 7 years of superabundant harvest. And they were on the way, but they would be followed by 7 years of a famine so devastating that the years of prosperity would be all but forgotten. Joseph advised Pharaoh to appoint someone to oversee the systematic storing up of grain in anticipation of that coming famine. And Pharaoh said, great idea, the job is yours. And so think about this. In a single day, Joseph ascended from the prison to the palace, from lowly prisoner to second in command over all of Egypt. Pharaoh was delighted with Joseph, giving him his signet ring and wealth and honor and a wife from a prominent family and even a new name. Joseph eventually fathered 2 sons who he named Menashe and Ephraim, from the verbs meaning to forget and to be plentiful or fruitful, since God had enabled him to forget his former woes and had made him fruitful. Meanwhile, Joseph diligently stored up 1/5 of the grain during these 7 good years. So much was stockpiled that they lost track and just stopped even trying to count it. But the prosperity ended abruptly, and the famine began. A famine so vast and severe that the entire Middle East was affected. Now our attention is turned back to Jacob and his family in Canaan. They're running out of grain. And by this time, everyone knows that Egypt is the only place in the world to find more. Jacob tells his sons to get off their tuchuses, as it were, and go down to Egypt to find more. But Benjamin, he keeps with him. He's already lost one of his beloved Rachel's sons. He won't risk the other. So the brothers arrive in Egypt, and Joseph recognizes them as they bow down to him. His dreams are being realized. But they don't recognize him. It's been over 20 years. He decides to test them. "You're spies," he says. They protest their innocence. They explain their situation. And in the process of telling him about them, they mention they have a younger brother back home with their dad. Oh, boy. Joseph puts them in a prison cell for 3 days, but then releases all of them except for Shimon, Simon, who is to be kept in confinement. Joseph sells them the grain, sends them on their way, but plainly tells them that to prove their honesty, they cannot come back to Egypt without their younger brother. Only then will he release Shimon. On their way home, they discover that their money has been put back into the sacks. And now they're afraid that they're going to be accused of stealing the grain. It is the beginning of a series of tests to which Joseph will subject them, precipitating a crisis which will force the brothers to confront their long-hidden sin. When Jacob's family again runs out of grain, the brothers have no choice but to return to Egypt. And despite Jacob's reluctance, this time the brothers bring Benjamin with them. Joseph orchestrates one more crisis, planting his own ornate goblet in Benjamin's sack of grain when he sends them away the second time. After they've departed, Joseph sends a guard to stop them. The guard rebukes them for having stolen his master's cup. They once again protest their innocence, and they invite him to examine their sacks. He does so, and to their dismay, it is found in Benjamin's sack. Oh, boy. Now, the others are told they are free to leave, but Benjamin will be taken and made a slave for the rest of his life. And the brothers are horrified. They know they can't return home without Benjamin. So they turn and they head back to Egypt to plead for his life. And that's where our parasha ends. It's a real cliffhanger. But you know, Joseph wouldn't be the last Jew taken captive to a foreign land, only later to interpret a king's dream and suddenly rise to prominence. The same thing happened to Daniel. What is it about the Jews and the revealing of mysteries? Our people, it seems, were chosen by God to unveil his mysterious plans and purposes to the nations. Ultimately, the greatest mystery, that Gentiles are going to join us and become part of God's one great family. Well, a few final thoughts. And the first is this: don't interpret your immediate circumstances to be the sum total of your life. You don't know any more than Joseph did what God has in store for you. He reallocates assets, whether it's grain or people, according to his infinite wisdom. You can trust Adonai to fulfill his good purposes in your life, but in his time, so learn to wait patiently. Secondly, I really think, and I know Rabbi Lauren shares this conviction, that we should learn from Joseph's example to be wise with our money and our resources. It's foolish to simply spend every penny that comes your way. We've got to plan and save for unforeseen hardship. It's just wisdom. Third, I believe Joseph's betrayal and captivity and his sudden rise from the prison to the palace foreshadow Messiah Yeshua's betrayal, death, resurrection, and exaltation. You know, Jacob thought he would never see his son again. He was wrong. He would soon learn that Joseph was alive and well and highly exalted. Likewise, the people of Israel reckoned they would never see Messiah Yeshua again, assuming him to be dead, but he has risen and is alive and well and highly exalted. Now, here's the interesting thing. In terms of the time frame of this parasha, Jacob doesn't yet know the truth about Joseph, but they will soon be reunited. Likewise, Israel at present doesn't yet know the truth about Yeshua, but that reunion will soon take place when he is revealed in splendor. Now, wouldn't you think that Joseph would be cited in the new covenant as a type of the Messiah, the innocent one, hated by his brothers, sold for the price of a slave, suffering unjustly, and then rising from the pit to the pinnacle? becoming the source of salvation to the very ones who hated him. Wouldn't you think that Joseph would be named in the new covenant as a type of Messiah? And I think perhaps it isn't stated because it didn't need to be stated. It is so plainly obvious to anybody who has read Genesis. It'd be like me saying, human beings breathe air. Just so obvious. Just as Joseph saved not only his own spiteful brothers, but through his wisdom, many other peoples, so Yeshua has become the source of salvation for both his own brothers and for men and women from every nation. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. So let's give thanks to Adonai, the God of reversals, for his kindness to the undeserving. And let's go out of our way to be vocal about it, to proclaim the one to whom spiritually starving people can come for sustenance.